Marhaba, everybody.
Ahlan wa sahlan.
Shalom.
Buongiorno.
Welcome to the Middle East Spring 2010 Chapel.
30 of us traveled throughout Egypt, Jordan, Palestine, Israel, Greece, and Italy for the past 3.5 months with Linford Stutzman, his son David Stutzman, and daughter-in-law Rebecca Stutzman.
Most of you got to experience the checkpoint that we had outside of the doors. Some of you may not have, but that was something that we experienced a lot as we traveled across various borders on our trip.
We hope that this chapel provides a glimpse of what our experience was like.
As Kristen and Chrissy have mentioned, we visited 5 countries, and within those countries toured all over the region, learning about history, religion, and culture, from the pyramids of Giza to the tombs of Luxor. We have learned about the ancient Egyptians from our tour guides and learned that everything we enjoy today is of pharaonic origin.
Then after hiking Mount Sinai, we crossed the Red Sea like the Israelites.
Except this time on a boat.
And landed in Jordan, where we met our tour guide Cosmo Kramer, Sam. Here we learned how living in the desert can affect one's faith by being more dependent on God for survival.
Our next stop was in Palestine, where we lived with host families and took classes in Arabic, Palestinian history and culture, and studied about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict from the Arab's perspective.
Following our time in the West Bank, we moved across the border to Mount Zion, where we began our intensive course on biblical archaeology at Jerusalem University College, visiting many tells all over Israel.
Then came free travel. We scattered all across the region, where some of us went as far away as Turkey, Lebanon, Syria, Dubai, and Kenya, while others remained in Israel.
Regrouping then in Jerusalem, we spent a week learning about Judaism and Israeli history and culture from within the walls of the Old City, before continuing at a kibbutz in the Galilee.
After our program of Judaism, we began a study of the Christian movement in Nazareth, starting with Jesus and ending with Paul.
Who then took us to Athens, Corinth, and Rome, where we finished our program with 4 more days of free travel in Italy.
Now that we've schlepped our stuff for the last time and have returned to Harrisonburg,
as you can see.
Okay, Amanda and I'm Larissa, if you don't know, we're going to share some words of wisdom that we learned from people we met on the way.
And books we read and songs we listened to. So this is a quote from John Steinbeck. Once a journey is designed, equipped, and put in process, a new factor enters and takes over. A trip, a safari, an exploration is an entirely different entity from all other journeys. It has personality, temperament, individuality, and uniqueness. A journey is a person in itself. No two are alike. And all plans, safeguards, policing, and coercion are fruitless. We find after years of struggle that we do not take a trip takes us. Tour master, schedules, reservations, brass band, and inevitable dash themselves to wreckage on the personality of the trip. Only when this is recognized do the frustrations fall away. In this, a journey is like a relationship. The certain way to be wrong is to think you control it.
One of the people we met and got to talk to on our trip was Archbishop Elias Shakur, who's been doing peace work. He's a Palestinian Christian. He's been doing peace work with Israelis and Palestinians in schools for most of his life. And one of the things he told us right when we met him straight away was that there are 2 places to see God. Deep inside yourself, how beautiful that is. And then get out and look outside yourself and other people around you.
At the peaceful retreat of Anaphora in Egypt, a great soul named Bishop Thomas spoke to us about love. Loving ourselves, loving God, and loving others. To describe this love, he used the analogy of water. After all, everyone knows the taste of water, but who can describe it?
Another Palestinian Christian we met, Father Jamal, spoke to us in Beit Sahor, in the West Bank, so it's the area under occupation. He spoke to us about hope. He said, as children of the resurrection, we can never lose hope. It's something that stuck with a lot of us for the rest of the trip.
And a band that Larissa and I listened to a lot was Mumford & Sons, and this is a quote that stuck with us. We were young, open flowers in the windy fields of this war-torn world.
Okay, a couple of us, we passed around a lot of books on this trip too, and one of them was The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck. And one of the quotes, he's talking about the U.S. during the Depression, but it stuck a lot with the Palestinian conflict. It says, the causes lie deep and simple. The causes are a hunger in the stomach, multiplied 1,000,000 times. A hunger in a single soul, hunger for joy and some security. multiplied a million times. Muscles and mind aching to grow, to work, to create, multiplied a million times. And then he says, in the beginning, I lost my land is changed. A cell is split, and from the splitting grows the thing people hate. We lost our land. The danger is here, for two men are not as lonely and perplexed as one. This is the beginning, from I to we.
And finally, in the words of Maya Angelou, perhaps travel cannot prevent bigotry, but by demonstrating that all peoples cry, laugh, eat, worry, and die, it can introduce the idea that if we try and understand each other, we may even become friends.
Throughout the cross-cultural, our group would meet periodically, and during these meetings, sometimes we would play a game of firsts, where we would all go around the circle and share one of the many things that we individually experienced for the first time.
It was a fun way to hear a little more of what each of us was experiencing on an individual basis.
A lot of these firsts that we're going to share are like things that the whole group experienced, but some of them are more individual basis. So just so you know, the ones that are individual basis, people will raise their hands so you can see who experienced it.
So without further ado, the firsts.
First time seeing the pyramids.
First time riding in sleeper trains.
First time watching the sunset on Mount Sinai.
First time running or falling while going down sand dunes.
First time swimming in the Galilee and in the Mediterranean.
First time attempting to cross the street in Cairo.
And the first time riding camels.
First time hand-washing clothes for 3 months.
First time living with Palestinian host families.
First time eating falafel, shawarma, and countless other delicious foods.
First time attending a synagogue service.
First time being held up at an Israeli checkpoint for 2 hours.
First time having an Easter sunrise service in Nazareth.
First time eating tinfoil dinners
while cooked. Allah Akbar, Allah.
Time hearing the call to prayer. And the 22nd time hearing the call to prayer. And the last time hearing the call to prayer.
First time competing in the Olympics in Athens.
First time snorkeling in the Red Sea.
First time, and hopefully the last time, staying in the honeymoon suite with 4 other guys.
First time spending the night on a ferry.
First time getting rear-ended in a rental car.
First time riding four-wheelers on a Greek island.
First time being accused of and interrogated for being Jewish.
First time hitchhiking.
First time wearing a toga.
First time seeing the Pope and hearing him speak.
First time wearing first century clothes.
And the first time getting baptized in the Galilee at Capernaum. All right, so those were just some of the first we experienced, some of the many things that we experienced, and we look forward to sharing more with you guys.
Good morning. My name is Sarah, and I'm going to be sharing a journal entry from February 9th, 2010. Saturated. I feel completely immersed into culture here, which is exactly what I was hoping for. I'm speaking broken Arabic with locals, eating delicious Palestinian meals in a home, building relationships, and getting dust all over my feet. And amidst all this, I'm feeling the sorrow and pain of these people as much as I'm able. We've taken several field trips this week, to Nablus, East Jerusalem, and today to Hebron. Everywhere we go, I'm reminded of the reality of these people. Checkpoints, roadblocks, walls, Israeli soldiers demanding ID. These Palestinians' attempt at living normal life seems near impossible. Things we never give a second thought to are huge obstacles to daily life. Will we have water this month? Will they stop importing food or health supplies without reason? Will we hit a checkpoint that may hold us for hours? Our trip to Hebron today was eye-opening and devastating. Although Hebron is very much within the green line dividing Israel and Palestine, Israeli military has taken over the heart of the city. Settlers, many of which come from America, perch themselves on top of a home and slowly take over. In an attempt to protect settlers, the Israeli soldiers are known for putting a 24-hour curfew on the city. Palestinians aren't allowed to leave their house for work, school, or even basic needs. The largest Palestinian city in the West Bank appeared to be a ghost town. While we were visiting, a man named Hashim was gracious enough to let us enter his home and hear his story. Hashim's house has been attacked several times, yet the only form of resistance that he uses is to stay put. He refuses to leave his home, and rightfully so. Because of this, Hashim has experienced violent retaliation in ways I cannot fathom. Just a few years ago, it came time for his pregnant wife to give birth. The destruction surrounding his house forces him to snake through beaten pathways to enter or leave his home. He carried his wife down to the street where he was approached by a soldier. "Why the hell are you outside?" the soldier demanded. Hashim explained that he was taking his wife to the hospital because she was in labor. "Stop messing with me, you Palestinians are always lying." He begged and pleaded with the soldier to let him pass, to which he responded, "Go home and let your wife die there." Hashim's wife miscarried their child that night. This is the second child she's lost. The first she lost when she was beaten by local settlers. Many of the things I've been seeing and hearing are too raw and painful to even put into words. All of us on this trip are finding it hard to know what our role is as young Americans. And in many ways, all we are asked to do is tell the truth. Let people know that the things we are seeing and hearing, let people know that there are educated, beautiful people living in this land. People that laugh, joke, cry, people with skin, with beliefs and thoughts. I passed a wall today where a settler had spray-painted "Gas the Arabs." I didn't know if I should cry, yell, or get sick. I'm very much immersed in one side of the conflict right now. In no way do I want to generalize the Jewish or Israeli population. The attacks on Palestinians are coming mainly from a much smaller minority of extreme Zionists. I'm anxious to hear what the Israeli perspective is beyond the wall. What we need in this land is a call for humanity. I've been challenged recently to ask myself if I see people with untainted eyes, as equals, as brothers and sisters, disregarding ethnicity, ability or disability, class, personality. I think we judge and react irrationally a lot more often than we'd like to believe. Every person deserves to love and to be loved.
I'm Nathan, and I'm going to be reading two short reflections I wrote during our stay in Beit Sahur, one about an encounter with an Israeli soldier, and one more generally about experience and life in occupied Palestine. I waved at an Israeli soldier today, I, a man standing free in the street, he locked away within his pillbox tower, looking out first from one tiny window, then another, a helmet covering his forehead, a mask his mouth. He looked at me for an unreadable moment, then drew his head away from the window slightly to allow the tips of four fingers to be seen swaying back, forth, and back down again, his brief wave disappearing behind a thick reality of concrete and circumstance. And it came to me that if I were a citizen of his country, my government would order me into the pillbox beside him. And the second is about, more generally, life in Palestine and the occupation. In February, I took a walk in Palestine, near Beit Sahur, and the place they call the Shepherd's Field. The ground was rocky around the ancient olive groves, and the cold sun glanced sharply off the stony face of the Har Humah settlement, that removed but ever-present reality. But as I walked further, I noticed that on some trees there were blossoms, delicate whites and pinks nudging persistently upward and outward, promising a bountiful almond harvest in the face of the eternal deep chill of winter's long occupation.
Journal entry, April 27th, 2010. We return to the U.S. in a matter of hours, and just like that, the last 3.5 months is over, and yet the effect this cross-cultural has had on my life will last forever. It sounds cliche, but it really is true that a cross-cultural is a life-changing experience. I know I will spend a long while, years even, processing it all and figuring out what I look like and what my life will look like as a result, but I suppose, at 22 years old, I still have plenty of time. I don't know exactly how much of my life has gone by, but I don't want to waste any more time getting my butt in gear to do what seems to be at least a start to what God has planned for me. I remember the day we arrived in Greece and how wrong it felt that I had just up and left Israel and Palestine after everything I had learned and experienced there over the last 2 months. I ended up enjoying myself in Greece, but there is still a significant part of me being nudged to go back and finish the learning I started and apply it for the betterment of Israel and the hope of Palestine. Unless God ends up pointing me in another direction soon, the Middle East, I think, will be my home for a significant amount of time. I am still reluctant to return to the U.S., a place I have increasingly not wanted to claim as my country, but perhaps some good is yet to come of returning. I know some of what is in store for me this summer, and yet as I enter a new chapter of my life, with so much to change and adjust to, I, of course, can't know what God has planned. Returning means seeing friends and family and sharing all the horrible and wonderful stories of things that happened every day. But it also means more challenges, adjustment, confusion, and even perhaps misunderstanding. It is all part of the journey we call cross-cultural, a journey that begins but doesn't end. There will be questions, but as a wise woman we met this semester said, sometimes we need to just let unanswered questions go unanswered. These experiences are unique and irreplaceable, and we share them with only 30 other people in the world. It is now our job to go out from here, to share and to learn and to teach of what we now know.
We will now be doing a montage of monologues that we wrote as the students who will be doing them, of a compilation of stories and experiences that we heard as we met people throughout Israel and Palestine. And so these stories are not necessarily of one particular person, but of some people that we met and talked to in these different groups.
My name is Rachel. I'm a Holocaust survivor, and I belong to this land.
My name is Shams, and I'm a Palestinian refugee, and I belong to this land.
My name is Muhammad, and I'm a Palestinian. I belong to this land.
I'm Shlomo. I'm an Israeli settler, and I belong to this land.
My name is Aharon. I'm an Israeli soldier, and I belong to this land.
My name is Nida. I am a child from Hebron, and I belong to this land.
My name is Rachel, and I am 87 years old. I am an Israeli. I grew up in eastern Poland. The Nazis destroyed my town, flattened my house, and led my family to the gas chambers. I'm lucky to be alive. After the war, where were my people and I to go? Israel. It belongs to us. It is the place God promised us during the time of Moses. It is the only place that we can be safe. I know a few people lived here before we came, but they don't belong to the land like we do.
My family was there.
They must understand. They must see that we, the Jews, need a state of our own in this land. I heard people on the news saying that our government is occupying land that doesn't belong to us in the West Bank. Can't they understand our soldiers are just there to keep the peace? We have to make sure that what happened during the Holocaust doesn't happen to us again. We have to make sure our young nation is safe. I am a Holocaust survivor, and I belong to this land.
My name is Shams, and I'm a Palestinian refugee. I'm 34. My grandparents were evicted from their land when the State of Israel was declared in 1948. My parents met in a refugee camp. I was born in the refugee camp. 3 generations homeless because of the Israeli takeover and occupation of Palestine. We were moved to Nablus when I was little to a larger camp. So many people cramped into a small space like Warsaw.
You don't know anything about Warsaw.
Some nights, when the dark closes in, it feels as though the walls and the people draw closer as well, and I nearly suffocate. Here, so many of the young men joined up with Hamas during the Second Intifada. Most of them, including my brother, I will never see again. I wish it would all end. I've heard the right of return for all Palestinian refugees, but the Israelis won't let us come home, wherever that is. We can't leave the West Bank because no other country will take any more refugees. We can't leave and we can't go home. We're at the in-between, stuck here for who knows how long. We are unwanted. I am unwanted. I am a refugee. I belong to this land.
My name is Muhammad Al-Khattab, and I am 79 years old. I am a Palestinian. I have lived in occupied Palestine for my whole life. And before Israel occupied us, the land was Jordan's. Before that, Britain, and even before that, it was part of the Ottoman Empire. This land is familiar with occupation. I am familiar with occupation. To me, occupation looks like having a house to live in, but no deed or sureness that I'll keep it. It looks like not having my own state with self-defined freedoms, clearly defined borders, a passport, and self-governance. Since the Nakba, we have resisted and protested and sung songs saying that we live here and deserve our rights to stay here and be Palestine. We work to be self-dependent and self-sustaining from Israeli occupation, including boycotting as much of Israeli products as we can.
Boycotting is anti-Semitism.
We have made some progress with the Palestinian Authority, but it's hard to say how much is progress. We govern ourselves in some aspects, but it's a young, somewhat flawed system. And the areas under the PA is only a small percentage, which Israel still meddles in anyways, with flying checkpoints and coming into Area A. So long as we are occupied, we won't be able to govern ourselves effectively. Yes, we're not perfect and have a lot to learn, but we're clearly not the only ones making mistakes. My name is Muhammad, and I belong to this land.
I'm Shlomo Wyman, and I live in Har Homa, a community in Judea. I have a wife and two kids, soon to be three. Just by living where I live, on my ancestors' land, and trying to connect to my heritage and identity, I am labeled as a settler. I am branded a colonist, and part of the Zionist occupation. Let me be perfectly clear with you. I live on disputed territory,
the West Bank,
in a legal neighborhood. We are a community, not a bunch of invaders. We've been here for a very long time, and we won't be leaving soon. I'm not a radical. I don't throw rocks. I don't demolish homes. I don't remember ever harassing or abusing anybody on either side of the wall. And you can't hold me responsible for what my government does. More often than not, Israelis have no choice. I'm not part of this so-called occupation. I just want to live my life, have a family, keep my children safe. That's what this is all about. Safety. Security. I know people, friends, who've been attacked. They've had stones thrown at them. They've been shot at. It's a simple reality that security barriers have saved lives. The checkpoints have reduced the number of casualties. They need fewer victims of terror. This isn't an occupation. It's self-defense. I'm Israeli, and I belong to this land.
My name is Aharon, and I'm a soldier in the Israeli Defense Forces. I'm 17 years old, but I'm turning 18 soon, and then hopefully I won't feel so young. Everyone has to take time to serve our country in some way. We need everyone's support to protect our land. We are constantly under attack, and we always need to be prepared. That's what they tell us. Now that we finally have this land, our land, back, we need to protect it. I just finished my military training and got placed in Jerusalem, in the old city. I'm supposed to keep the streets safe. That's my job. There are so many people here. A lot of tourists, but everyone gets along, for the most part. I'm really glad I got placed here. One of my friends from training, he got placed in Hebron. I talked to him the other day, and well, I just feel lucky I got placed here in Jerusalem. Even the Arab shopkeepers seem friendly enough. They don't seem to be doing any harm, just trying to make a living, I guess. But some of them, the younger ones, I see the way they look at me. I see their eyes glaring at me in my uniform, staring at my gun. I see the hatred and resentment in those eyes.
I see the little boys pointing their little toy guns at me. And I see it when they pull the little fake trigger. Why do they hate me? Why do they look at me like that? I'm just doing my job, keeping everyone safe. And when the Arabs throw rocks and start riots, I'm just responding. I need to respond. I mean, that's my job, right? Keeping everyone safe. I'm just doing my job, right? I'm just trying to do my job. My name is Aharon, and I belong to this land.
My name is Nida, and I'm 7 years old. I am a Palestinian. I live in Hebron. I have two older sisters. My grandfather lives with us, too. He used to live in another house with a shop, but then these men came and they told him to leave. Now they live there. My grandfather gets sad sometimes. I try to make him happy, but it's hard when he's so sad. I hear him talking to my parents. He wishes he could have his house and shop back. I'm not really sure why the people came and took his house. Me and my sisters go to school every day. I like school, but I get so scared. We try to hurry when we go to school, but sometimes the children who speak Hebrew yell at me, and then they push me. They tell me this is their land. They are so mad at me. I don't know what I did to make them so angry. The soldiers with guns don't do anything to stop them from hurting me. The soldiers scare me. They don't smile very much. I don't think they see me. They stand at the checkpoints and make us wait in long lines. My parents told me they are here to protect the people who throw trash in our yard and cut down our olive trees. My parents call them settlers or something like that. I don't want to be scared anymore. I'm just a child, and I belong to this land.
My name is Rahel. My name is Shams.
My name is Muhammad.
My name is Shlomo.
My name is Ahar.
My name is Nida.
And I belong to this land.
I are going to really quickly read through cross-cultural by the numbers. These are just some statistics from our cross-cultural. Number of countries visited, 12.
Number of miles walked in 4 days on the Jesus Trail, 45.
Number of blisters acquired, mostly during the Jesus Trail, 130.
Total number of pictures taken, 37,800, and probably a lot more.
Total number of pictures of goats taken, 161, and two videos.
Number of new piercings, 10.
Number of haircuts, 27.
Number of scarves bought, 267.
Number of types of bread in a Luxor train breakfast, 6.
Number of birthdays celebrated, 13.
Number of bags searched when leaving Israel because of one book, 33.
Number of hookahs purchased, 12.
Number of days Aaron didn't wear his Crocs, 4.
Number of Jesus sandals bought, 47.
Number of pieces of pita eaten, uncountable.
Number of engagements when the trip started, 1. And number of engagements now, 4. Or 2. Sorry. 2 people, 4 people.
And number of baptisms on this trip, 1.
Thanks.
Over this semester, we've had so many guest lecturers and tour guides and hosts to thank that me and Charisse and Jill just have it down to a science. So, Linford, first, thank you so much for all the leadership that you've provided and the hours of work that you put in behind the scenes, all of the stuff that we don't recognize, and your energy and enthusiasm and our role as the ultimate lecturer and tour guide and host for all of us.
Yes.
So, nothing really is sufficient to show you how much we appreciate what you've done. But on behalf of the whole group, we have this small token of thanks. Just kidding. So, really, thank you so much. Whoa.
And Dave and Rebecca, you both have been incredible leaders throughout this trip. We appreciate all the planning, organizing, and hard work you've put into making this trip an amazing experience for all of us. Not only have you guys been great leaders, but you've been wonderful role models and friends to us all. So thank you from everyone.
All right, well, this has been our chapel, and I hope we've been able to show you what we just did. We're going to turn it over to the athletic department real quick. We understand we're running late on time, as expected. And so we're going to have a slideshow after they're done, so stick around if you can. If not, go take a final.
We would like to thank the cross-cultural group for giving us just a moment. Last Friday was a special student recognition chapel in which we recognized students from across the spectrum here at the university for their accomplishments. But an amazing thing happened between last Friday and Wednesday in the town of Salem, Virginia. I'd like to introduce to you the ODAC champion softball team. You may take your pick between Remember the Titans, Bad News Bears, or anything else you might want to. There will be stories coming out on this great accomplishment after we've recovered a little bit. Losing the last four games of the season, sliding into the eighth and final spot, they went to Salem, won four in a row, and brought back the first ODAC championship since 2004 and the first softball championship since 1990. I would like to ask the seniors to come and make a presentation of the plaque to President Swartz and Trooper.
Hi, my name is Nicole, and I would just like to thank the community for all their support this past weekend and over the season. We really appreciate it. And I'd like to thank my team for all your hard work this weekend. It was a lot of fun and had a great season and hope to keep going on. On behalf of the softball team, President Swartz and Trooper, we would now like to present to you the ODAC championship plaque.
Thank you for representing Eastern Mennonite University so well this last weekend and throughout the season. We wish you well as you go into the NCAA tournament in 2 weeks, I believe. Has location been determined yet or announced? No. Maybe Christopher Newport, maybe Salisbury, Maryland, maybe another location. But watch our website, and let's continue to support them as they take it to the next level. And we are so proud of your accomplishments. Thank you so very much for all you've done. Good luck.